Yep. Thanks. So it's an honor and pleasure to celebrate Alan's birthday this way. This is an awesome conference, so thanks for having me. As I wrote up there, this is all joint work with Tom Braden, Tony Licata, Chris Fahn, and Ben Webster. So let me start with an extremely general definition. So let U be a vector space, a finite dimensional complex vector space. And let S be the symmetric algebra, SIMU, generated in degree 2. So I want to think of elements of U having degree 2 in this polynomial ring. Let Z be a finitely generated commutative graded S algebra. Let I be a finite set. And last, I want to have an S algebra homomorphism H from Z to the direct sum over all alpha and I of X. Okay, so this quadruple, I guess, the U up a little bit. This quadruple U, Z, I, and H, I'm going to call a GM algebra. GM for Gretzky-McPherson. So what's the motivating example here? The motivating example is an equivariant cohomology ring. So if X is an algebraic variety over C with no odd cohomology, and T is a torus acting on X with finitely many fixed points, okay, then I can take U to be T dual, right? So that means that S is SIM T dual, which is the T equivariant cohomology of a point. I can let Z be the equivariant cohomology ring. Okay. I can let I be the fixed point set. And then H is going to be the localization map. So H is the map from equivariant cohomology to equivariant cohomology of the fixed point set, which is just a direct sum over I of copies of the equivariant cohomology of a point. Okay, so this is just supposed to be generalizing the notion of an equivariant cohomology ring with its localization map. And I want to think about some very specific equivariant cohomology rings as a sub-example in a second. But before I do that, let me just point out that it can be useful to think of this localization map geometrically. So we have Z going to the direct sum of the S's. So this is H. And Z is mapped to by SIM of the degree 2 part of Z. In other words, this is just the image of this in here is just the sub-algebra of Z generated in degree 2. Right? And this here is mapped to by S. Okay, so I just have these maps of algebras. And I can take spec everywhere and turn them around. So here I get Z2 dual mapping surjectively to U check, U dual, and I'm going to call this phi, and this is just spec Z, and this is the disjoint union of alpha and I of U dual. I've just taken spec of everything in sight. More geometric way to think about these maps of commutative algebras. And now let me just make a definition. Let H alpha in Z2 dual be the image of the alpha U dual. So I have, you know, finitely many copies of a vector space here. And for each of them, let me look at its image in this vector space. And I get an arrangement of linear subspaces of this vector space, which I'm going to call H alphas. And they all project isomorphically to U dual via phi. Okay, so now let me give an actual specific example, or two specific examples. So for the first example, I'm going to take x to be p2, or t star p2, since I prefer to think about symplectic varieties, but since I'm talking about equivariant cohomology, it really doesn't matter. They're homotopy equivalent. So the equivariant cohomology of x for the natural two-dimensional torus action that makes it toric, right? It's a polynomial ring on three generators in degree 2 modulo the product x, y, z. Right? X, y, z are the classes of the three coordinate lines in P2, and their product is 0. Okay, and inside this, we have the equivariant cohomology of a point, which is just generated by x minus y and y minus z. So geometrically, what does this look like? What is spec of this? Well, spec of it is the three coordinate planes in C3. I'm going to draw it in R3. Yuck. Okay. X equals 0, y equals 0, and z equals 0. And this is projecting via phi to spec of S, which is just a single plane. So this is projecting along the 1, 1, 1 vector, and I get three planes all projecting isomorphically to a single plane. Right, so that's exactly this picture, which is just this picture turned around. Okay, so that's one example. Then I want to draw a second example, which is in some sense dual to this one, and so I'll make precise in a minute. So my second example, I'm going to take x to be a pair of two spheres touching at a point. Or, if you prefer, I'm going to take C2 mod Z3 and resolve it. So that's something, this is some smooth symplectic surface that's homotopy equivalent to this. Okay. And now I'm going to take a T1 action, a one-dimensional torus action. So the equivariant cohomology of this guy has, again, three generators, which I'll call x check, y check, and z check. And now the relations are that x check, y check is 0, x check is 0, and y check is 0. If you like, x check, y check, and z check are the classes where if you localize them, they're supported at this point, and this point. So the product of any two of them vanishes. So here we have S including N, and it looks like the sum. So what does spec of this look like? Well, spec of this looks like the three coordinate lines in C3. Spec of this just looks like this. The three coordinate lines in space. And this maps via, I'll call it phi check, to a single coordinate line. So three lines projecting isomorphically to a single line. Okay, so, well, motivated by these two things, well, first of all, these two pictures should look somehow dual. I have three planes in space and three lines in space. Yeah? I mean, this is the equivariant cohomology of a point embedding into the equivariant cohomology of X. I mean, it's true, I haven't told you how the torus is acting on X, but, well, it's acting on X such that this is an attracting point for this P1 and a repelling point for the other, but it doesn't really matter. Yeah, this is just equivariant cohomology of a space is a module over equivariant cohomology of a point. Okay, so, again, motivated by this, let me define what it means to be dual, for two GM algebras to be dual. What's that? Certainly in my examples, but that's not part of the definition. Okay. The definition, a duality between a quadruple U, Z, I, H, and another quadruple U check, Z check, I check, and H check is, first of all, a bijection between I and I check. So here, I parametrizes the three planes, and I check parametrizes the three lines, and I want a bijection between the planes and the lines. And second, a perfect pairing between the ambient spaces of these arrangements, so Z2 dual and Z2 check dual. That's the R3 on top, or the C3 on top, and the C3 on the bottom, such that, first of all, for all alpha and I, H check alpha check is perp to H alpha. Right? So in other words, I want the R3 in which this lives, I should make dual to the R3 in which this lives, such that those three planes are the perps of these three lines, and vice versa. And second of all, I want it to respect these phi maps, so the kernel of phi check should be perps to the kernel of phi. So not only are those three planes supposed to be perp to these three lines, but the kernel of phi, which is a line, should be perp to the kernel of phi check, which is a plane. And this is an example of duality, of a duality. Okay, so I gave you one example. Let me give you a more general, you know, infinite family of examples that generalizes this. Again, coming from equivariant cohomology. Two different S's, right? Here's a spec S is two-dimensional, and here's spec S is one-dimensional. Okay, so let's do an example from geometric representation theory. So lambda and mu are partitions of N. And N mu is nilpotent of type mu. It's an N by N matrix nilpotent whose Jordan blocks have size mu1, mu2, etc. And I want to let x lambda mu to be the Spaltenstein variety. So it's the set of flags 0 equals f0 contained in f1 all the way up to fl, which is cn, such that, first of all, the dimension of fi mod fi minus 1 should be not lambda I, but actually lambda transpose I, so that it's a partial flag, and the partialness is given by the lambda, and it's respected by the nilpotent. So n mu of fi should be contained in fi minus 1, okay, for all I. Okay, so for example, when lambda is n, it's a little higher, if lambda is the partition with only one piece, then this is a Springer fiber. So this is a complete flag respected by the nilpotent. So for example, x with this lambda and this mu is this guy that we've seen. Okay? And if mu is extreme, if mu is the all ones partition, then this is a partial flag variety. This condition is going to turn out to be not important, and we have x, this guy, is p2. Okay. So these are some varieties that generalize the varieties that I wrote down already. Right, because in this case, n sub mu is 0, so you can forget about that condition, and it's just a partial flag variety. Okay, so what's the theorem then? Proposition that if you take the equivariant cohomology ring of x lambda mu with respect to the natural torus that acts, I won't bother to tell you what it is, but there's a torus that acts there, that this is dual to the equivariant cohomology ring of x lambda transpose mu transpose with respect to its natural torus. So here, this is the transpose of this, and this is the transpose of this. So this theorem generalizes the example that I wrote down in the beginning. And in the special case where lambda is n, so when we have Springer fibers and partial flag varieties, this duality, this relationship between the spec of the equivariant cohomology rings, was observed by Goreski and McPherson. So this is why we call them Goreski-McPherson algebras and Goreski-McPherson duality. Yeah? Sure. In these cases, they'll be exactly the same. Yeah. Yeah. What's that? Well, it's this where that's a full flag. So you have a certain nilpotent, and you're looking at the set of all flags, such that the nilpotent takes the ith piece into the I minus first piece. So when lambda is n, then lambda transpose is all 1s. So that says that vim of fi mod fi minus 1 is 1 for all I. Yeah. Sure. Okay, so I write this down, and for the more hardcore representation theorists in the house, this might sort of remind you of another duality. So for those of you who don't know these words, you can black box this, but A lambda mu, let this be the endomorphism algebra of a minimal projective generator of a lambda block of mu parabolic BGG category O. Okay. So this is a category that's studied a lot in representation theory, and if you're not familiar with that, okay, this is just some finite dimensional non-commutative algebra that you somehow canonically associate to lambda and mu. And now there are two theorems. First, a theorem of Bakalan says that this algebra is Kazule dual, and more about what that means in a while, to the same algebra with lambda and mu transposed and reversed. Okay, so there's a similar looking duality. And second, this is a theorem in this generality due to John Brendon that says that the center of this algebra, this is non-commutative, but its center is the cohomology ring of exactly that space that I wrote down. Not equivariant cohomology, but ordinary cohomology. Right, so this second theorem says that these algebras have something to do with these spaces, and this first theorem says there's already some known duality going on there, so it suggests that this duality should have something to do with this duality. Right? So this, I'm going to write this out as a very sort of vague program. So if I want to understand Goreski-McPherson duality and find more examples, let me look at those two theorems and kind of formulate a program. So I'm going to divide it into two steps. So step one is, given a nice algebra, I won't say what nice means now, but it means in particular Kazule and more, so nice like these, given a nice algebra, produce a GM algebra, which I'll call GM of A. I haven't defined it. I mean, that's part of what I want to do, but produce some GM algebra, and show that GM of A is dual in the sense that I defined to GM of A shriek, where A shriek is the Kazule dual algebra. And again, I'll define this in a minute. But in other words, show that if we have dual algebras in a certain sense, then we can construct out of them dual GM algebras. That's part one. And part two is, given, again, a nice, and I won't say what that means, torus acting on a space, we should produce one of these algebras. Right? Such that, well, first of all, we want the cohomology of the space to look like the center of A, and second of all, we want the equivariant cohomology of the space to look like the GM algebra. Right? So how do I mean, once I have this program in place, how do I find spaces whose equivariant cohomology rings are GM dual? What I should do is associate an algebra to a space, and then look at my various spaces and look for spaces whose associated algebras are Kazul dual. And then, by my program in part one, their equivariant cohomology rings will be GM dual in the way that I wrote before. So one is done, and that's what I want to tell you about for the rest of the talk. So this is kind of the end of the geometry in the talk. Now we're going to go to pure algebra. Two is very much a work in progress, and I'll just give a little hint about how this works. So, as I said in the beginning, I like to consider smooth symplectic varieties, so X should be some symplectic variety, and T should be acting Hamiltonianly. And if X is actually the cotangent bundle of something, then we should look at the category of D modules on the base of the cotangent bundle, smooth with respect to a certain stratification of the base induced by the torus, and then take the X algebra of the direct sum of the simples in that category. So somehow we know how to do two when we're dealing with a cotangent bundle, like T star P2, and sort of all of our work is trying to understand what the analog of this category of D modules should be when we're not working on a cotangent bundle. What's that? Oh, some relationship between X and X check.
No, what this algebraic notion means topologically.
That would be great. We have no conjectures, except it looks like these arise as moduli spaces for dual three-dimensional topological field theories, these
so
dual pairs.
Yeah,
so I have absolutely no answer. In particular, as you've seen, they're not going to have the same dimension. Right? I've already shown you one dual pair. One is T star P2, and the other is the resolution of a surface singularity. Mm-hmm. So so this is a strange geometric notion of duality. Okay, so now let me explain how one works, and let me just say, I mean, if you don't know anything about equivariant cohomology or category O or anything like that, this was all just motivation. So you can start afresh, and I'm going to define nice algebras and produce these GM algebras and give you a very quick outline of how we show that they're dual. So all the other stuff didn't really need to follow. Okay, so let I be a finite set with an ordering. It's a linear order on this set. And let R be just a ring with a bunch of idempotents and nothing else. So E alpha times E beta is E alpha if alpha equals beta and is zero otherwise. This ring of idempotents. M and W, finite dimensional R bimodules. And I, an inclusion of W into M tensor over RM. So I'm going to write this as W goes to R sub W. Okay. And this is the data that I'm going to start with to define an algebra. So here are my dual algebras. So A is going to be, and I'll give an example in a second to make this look a lot simpler, the tensor algebra of M modulo these quadratic relations. And A shriek is going to be the dual thing. So A shriek is going to be the tensor algebra of the vector space dual of M modulo the perps of these relations. So let me do an example instead of trying to explain what this notation means. So So my A is going to be a quiver algebra, the path algebra of a quiver, mod some paths of length 2. So here, my I is going to be the nodes of a quiver. So I have an idempotent at each node, a path of length 0. And my M is going to be spanned by the arrows in the quiver. I'm going to call this X, Z, Y, and W. So the tensor algebra of M over R is just paths in this quiver, where you can compose paths by concatenating them, and if they don't match up, you get 0. Okay, and I'm going to define my I of W, and define my W actually as a submodule here, my I of W to be C of the path XY and the path YX minus ZW. So I'm just looking at the algebra of all paths in this quiver minus the relation that this loop is 0 and this loop is equal to this loop. Okay? Big W, I mean, I'm actually defining big W. You'll see in a minute why it's convenient for me to have W not be, by definition, a submodule here. But really, think of W as a space of degree 2 relations. So here I'm actually defining W as sitting inside of here. But because of the notation I'm going to introduce in a while, it's going to be convenient to distinguish between W and R sub W. So W is some two-dimensional vector space, and R sub one of the guys is XY, and R sub the other guy is YX minus ZW. And so this is my A. Well, what's my A shriek? Well, I have the same R. I have M dual, so the arrows go in the other direction. 1, 2, 3. So X shriek goes here, and Y shriek goes here. Z shriek goes like this. W shriek goes like this. And the relations are the perps of the relations I had over here. So I shriek of W shriek is, well, I'm going to have Z shriek, W shriek. So here, I had no relations among loops that start and end at 3. Right? WZ was not one of my relations. So that means on the perp side, I should have all relations among loops that start at 3. So Z shriek, W shriek should be 0. Here, I have all relations among loops of length 2 that start at 1. Right? XY was 0. So that means here, I should have no relations among loops that start and end at 1. Here I have one relation among loops that start and end at 2, and there's two dimensions worth of loops. So here I should also have one relation among loops that start and end at 2. It should be the perp of that relation. So it's going to be X shriek, Y shriek, plus W shriek, Z shriek. And finally, here I have no relations among loops from 1 to 3, and no relations, I'm sorry, paths from 1 to 3, and no relations among paths from 3 to 1. So here I should have all relations. So Z shriek, X shriek is 0, and Y shriek, W shriek is 0. So these are the two dual algebras that I'm going to consider. And just a note, if you compute the centers of these algebras, these are of course non-commutative, but if you write down the center, you'll find that the center of this looks like the cohomology ring of P2, and the center of this looks like the cohomology ring of the two spheres touching at a point. So this is actually a continuation of the example that I did in the beginning, that example. In general, for all of these varieties, I can write down an algebra like this, a quiver algebra like this, whose center is the cohomology ring of the corresponding variety. In fact, that's exactly the theorem of Brundin that I erased. Okay, so I have these algebras. What am I going to do with them? Well, for each node of one of these algebras, there's a very important right module over that algebra. So there's an important right A module, V alpha, for alpha is 1, 2, and 3, which is all paths starting at alpha. I'm going to write mod something, but you can see already, if I just said all paths starting at alpha, this would be a right A module. If I have a path that starts in alpha, and I concatenate it with something on the right, it's a new path, and it still starts at alpha. Right? And now I'm going to mod out by paths that pass through some node beta that's greater than alpha. So what is it in these examples? So here, well, I'll just do the first example. So this is my A. So here, V3, well, there are no nodes greater than 3. So this is just all paths that start at 3, and I'm not going to write them all down, but there's the constant path that just stays at 3. There's W, there's WZ, there's WY, and there are a lot more. V2 is a lot simpler. These are paths that start at 2, modulo those that pass through 3, so there's the constant path that just stays at 2. There's Y that goes to 1, and that's it. You might think that there's also YX, but remember YX is equal to ZW, and that passes through 3, so that's 0. So this is only two-dimensional. And V1, of course, is just the constant path at 1, because once I go anywhere from 1, I pass through a node greater than 1. Okay. So I have these modules, and now I'm going to make sort of a non-definition, so I'm going to put it in quotes, but A is called standard Kazule. If these modules behave like Verma modules. So Verma modules are certain modules over the universal enveloping algebra of a Lie algebra. Like Verma modules. What does that mean? It means projectives have nice filtrations by Vermas, and Vermas have nice filtrations by simples, and Vermas admit linear projective resolution. So I mean, all of these are technical things that I don't want to get into here. But if these modules behave like some very familiar modules in representation theory, then the algebra is called standard Kazule. Are we going to leave these? Maybe I'll leave this. Turn on this board. So it's a theorem of Agostone, Dlab, and Lukács that, first of all, standard Kazule is stronger than Kazule. That's not really obvious from the definition, but if you know what a Kazule algebra is, it's a standard Kazule algebra is a special case of this. And second of all, maybe more important for what I'm going to say, that A is standard Kazule if and only if A shriek is standard Kazule with respect to the opposite order. So when I define the V alphas over here, I should consider 1 to be the biggest node, and 2 to be the next biggest, and 3 to be the smallest node. And with respect to that ordering, it'll also be standard Kazule. If I did it backward, it wouldn't. Okay. So this is some notion that's preserved by duality. Okay, so now I have my dual Kazule, and in fact, better than Kazule, standard Kazule algebras. And I want to construct out of it somehow a GM algebra. Right, so I want to construct a commutative algebra and a localization map and everything like that. And we know from our examples that the GM algebra should be a deformation of the center of this algebra. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to define a deformation of this algebra and take the center of that. That's my strategy. So, okay, time to define a deformation of A, and I'm going to start by doing it in the most naive possible way. So this notation won't last long because this will end up being a dumb definition. So I'll give it a dumb notation. So A umlaut. I'm going to take the tensor algebra of M, so the quiver, and I'm going to take some extra parameters, which are exactly given by this vector space W. So here W is two-dimensional, so I'm going to take this, you know, the pads in this quiver plus two extra parameters, U1 and U2, that are central and live in degree 2. And I'm going to mod out by RW minus E alpha W E beta for all W in sort of the alpha beta part of big W. So what does this mean? It means my relations in A were indexed by the elements of W. So I kind of want to say, given a relation, RW, I'm just going to set it equal to that element of W. But I'm going to do something a little more subtle than that. I'm going to remember if this was a relation from node alpha to node beta. I'm going to remember that by multiplying here by the idempotents alpha and E alpha and E beta. So remember that it goes from node alpha to node beta. Preserve this grading. And let me note that this is kind of dumb. I mean, W is central. So these E alpha and E beta collide. So if alpha is not equal to beta, this is zero. So it says if I had a relation from node 1 to node 3, I keep it, right? Because this will just be 0, and I'll have RW is 0 again. If alpha is equal to beta, this just says E alpha times W. So I remember if I have a relation from node 1 to node 1, then I set it equal to U1, this element of W, times the E1 at that node. Okay? So let's actually, well, I'll write it down in these examples, but let me sort of say something about it first. So this is a deformation of A over spec of this, right? That's the base. Right? So over spec of sim W, which is W dual. And if you follow through the definitions, W dual is actually equal to the degree 2 part of the dual algebra. This is a deformation of this. This deformation is really bad, right? That's why I gave it the bad notation. In particular, it's almost never flat. But we can fix it. We can restrict it to a subspace of this and make it flat. So this is a bad deformation with a good sub-deformation inside of it. Okay. So let U be the center of A2 dual. This is a quotient of A shriek dual 2, which is W. And let S be sim U. And let A tilde, which is nice respectable notation, be A umlaut tensor over sim W with S. Geometrically, I've taken this deformation over the degree 2 part of A shriek, and I've restricted it to the degree 2 part of the center of A shriek, which is smaller. Now this is better. This is in fact flat now. So theorem, well, if A is Kazuel, so, which I'm kind of implicitly assuming, so if A is Kazuel, then A tilde is flat, and in fact, it's the universal flat graded deformation, right? And it's universal flat graded deformations. Okay. So this is the canonical deformation of A. Okay, so let's see what we actually get in our examples. Get a handle on it. So for A, actually A tilde and A umlaut are the same because you can, if you check, all of A shriek in degree 2 is central. So for the special case of this particular algebra A, there's no difference. So what is this? This is the quiver algebra adjoined two parameters, U1 and U2. Modulo the relations XY is equal to U1, E1. U1 is the parameter corresponding to XY, and we remember that it's at node E1. And YX minus VW is equal to U2, E2. So that's A tilde. And A shriek tilde, well, a priori we have four elements here. So the base we'd expect to be four-dimensional. But of course, these are nodes. I mean, these are not these are not loops, right? So these guys don't get deformed. So then we'd expect a two-dimensional deformation. But now we restrict to a one-dimensional sub-deformation because actually the center of A is in degree 2 is two-dimensional. Sorry, A in degree 2 is two-dimensional, but the center of A is one-dimensional. So this guy is actually going to have only one parameter, which I'll call U shriek. And we get Z shriek, W shriek, minus U shriek, E1, X shriek, Y shriek, plus W shriek, Z shriek, minus U shriek, E2, and Z shriek, X shriek, and Y shriek, W shriek. So let me again emphasize what happened. When we define the umlaut version, we get a U1 shriek here and a U2 shriek here. And then when we go to the E tilde version, we identify U1 shriek with U2 shriek. So it ends up like this. Okay, so I already kind of hinted at where we're going to get our commutative algebra from. We're trying to construct a GM algebra here. Right, so now we've defined a deformation, and the commutative algebra is going to be the center of this deformation. But the key thing that we're missing here is the localization maps. And that comes from these V alphas. So this is maybe the key proposition for defining a GM algebra. So each of these modules, V alpha, deforms flatly to an A tilde module, V alpha tilde. The longer piece of chalk somewhere. Okay. So these modules deform flatly to modules over the deformed algebra. And the center of A tilde acts on the alpha tilde via an S algebra homomorphism, which I'll call H alpha from Z alpha tilde to S. Right, I mean, S is the symmetric algebra on these parameters. Right, so S is a subalgebra of A tilde. So I'm saying that the module V2, which is an A module, deforms to an A tilde module, V2 tilde. And furthermore, if I take an element of the center and see how it acts on V2 tilde, it acts via an element of this polynomial ring. And what element? Well, H2 picks out that element. So now I can make my definition. So the GM algebra of A is the triple U center of A tilde I, the set of nodes, all the alphas, and the direct sum of the H alphas. That's my localization map. Now I've defined the GM algebra. Okay, so that was half the battle here, given a nice algebra, a standard Kazuo algebra, actually just a Kazuo algebra so far. That's all I need for this to work. I've defined it. No, sorry, I needed standard Kazuo for this theorem. So given a standard Kazuo algebra, I defined a GM algebra. So now we want to see somehow how is this GM algebra dual to the GM algebra associated to A shriek. Where is that duality going to come from? So, well, it turns out I need one more assumption, niceness condition. Seems very natural. So, definition, a standard Kazuo algebra is flexible. In other words, it deforms well. If the degree 2 part of the center of the deformation projects onto the degree 2 part of A itself. So this is actually a weakening of the condition. So A tilde is a flat deformation of A over S. You might expect that the center of A tilde is a flat deformation of the center of A over S. And we want that to be true. In fact, we don't quite need that. We only need this surjectivity, which is a weakening of that. But you can assume we're saying that the center of the deformation is a nice deformation of the center of the original ALSCA. Okay, what do you get from flexibility? Well, you have this surjection from the center here to the center of the undeformed guy, and the kernel is U by flatness. Now U, remember, that's isomorphic to the center of the dual guy in degree 2, dualized. And furthermore, this map, well, furthermore, we have a splitting here, which is H alpha. We have a lot of splittings, one for each node. That's kind of the definition of H alpha here, the splits. And let me point out that all that stuff, all that geometric stuff, those subspace arrangements that I defined in the beginning, you can see here. So this map here is actually the dual of the map phi. Remember, phi went from the dual of this vector space to the dual of U. Right? So, I'll just write it down. So this subspace H alpha is actually the kernel of the map H alpha, perp thereof. And the kernel of phi is the image of phi star. So we have these subspaces, H alpha and the kernel of phi, and they lay in the dual of this vector space. So I'm just saying you can recover them as the perp of the image of this map and the perp of the kernel of this map. So somehow this sequence encodes all that geometry. Yeah?
Are you assuming that you're starting with a quiver? Or are you assuming that you have the alpha somehow from the beginning? I don't necessarily see how to get them to zero.
Yeah, I mean, assuming you start with a quiver, yeah. Okay, so we got this thing, all right. So here's, what do we get on the dual side? So this little statement here turns out to be quite technical and one of the main points in the theorem, in the paper. So if A is flexible, A check is also flexible. So we get something that looks just like that, but for the check. So we get 0 goes to U shriek goes to Z of A shriek in degree 2, tilde goes to Z of A shriek in degree 2 goes to 0. This thing is isomorphic to Z of A in degree 2 dual, and this is split by an H alpha shriek. And now, remember the main thing I needed to do for Gorevsky McPherson duality, well, I needed a bijection between the indexing sets I's on both sides, but I have that automatically from the definition of the algebras. The main thing I needed was a perfect pairing between the ambient spaces in which these arrangements lived. And that was the dual of Z A tilde 2 and the dual of Z A shriek tilde 2. So I need a pairing between this guy and this guy, or equivalently between their duals. And I claim that these splittings will give me a pairing. For each alpha, I can identify this with this direct sum this, and I can identify that with this direct sum this. And you see, this is the dual of this, and this is the dual of this. So for each alpha, I actually get my pairing. So for each alpha, get perfect pairing between Z, A shriek tilde 2, dual and Z A tilde 2 dual. So I get my perfect pairing. And it's obvious from this picture that H alpha will be perp to H alpha check and the kernel of phi will be perp to the kernel of phi check, since H alpha is exactly sort of the kernel of this. And the fact that I use the splittings, the H alphas, to define the pairing mean that the properties that I want are exactly there. But there's still a problem here, right? I wanted one pairing for which every H alpha is perp to every H alpha check. And what I have is, for each alpha, a pairing where H alpha is perp to H alpha check. And these splittings are definitely different. I mean, remember, this is supposed to generalize equivariant cohomology, so the different localization maps at each fixed point, there are certainly different maps. But then the theorem that makes it all work, this is the last thing I'll write. All the pairings are the same. And let me stress that this is actually quite weird, because the splittings are not the same. Right? For each alpha, I get a different splitting. And I use the splitting to define a pairing. And bizarrely, these very different splittings, and we go back to that original picture with the three lines and the three planes. It's like with one line and one plane, I have an obvious pairing where that line is the perp of that plane. And with another line and another plane, I have an obvious pairing where that line is the perp of that plane. And another with the third. And I construct these pairings by three very different techniques, splitting these R3s into R1 plus R2s in very different ways. And then it turns out in the end that they're actually all the same pairing. And now that's it. So corollary GM of A is dual, canonically dual, to GM of A check. So I'll stop there.